We're talking literary magazines today, and a well-established literary magazine in the English-speaking world is the British-based Granter magazine, and it's helped launch the careers of many of the best writers in English today. It promotes itself as a magazine of new writing, interested in what it says is the story's supreme ability to describe, illuminate, and make real. It looks like a classy book, but the magazine had more humble origins. It began as a small student rag in the late 1800s at Cambridge University, with the name referring to the river that runs through Cambridge. In its early incarnation, the magazine published pieces by A.A. Milne and Arthur Conan Doyle, but its reputation as home to the best new writing took hold in the 1970s, when it was reinvented and reinvigorated by two American postgraduates. Throughout the 1970s and 80s, the magazine showcased new work by writers such as Martin Amis, Salman Rushdie, Angela Carter, Richard Ford, and Joyce Carol Oates. Granter's current editor is John Freeman, a writer and critic who lives in New York City. He was in Australia recently as a guest of the Sydney Writers Festival, and he spoke with the book show's Kate Piercy about the power of the story.
I think there's a couple things. Stories are vessels for experience, and they're less leaky than, say, argument or essays, because there are things that you can do in a story, things that you can understand that you can't fathom in other ways. I mean, look at most religions are stories. They're ways of understanding the world. And the reason why we believe in stories at Granter is there's so much in the media that has to tell you how to think, how to frame an event, how to sort of parse it down. But there's lots of things which are mysterious about the world, about world events, about human experience, which don't fit into Kant and argument. And so what we want is for people to tell us a story, tell us a piece of fiction, tell us a story about their family. And that way I think we can refract the way that history impacts all of our lives into something that transports you.
Grant has been described by the Observer newspaper as a champion of contemporary realist fiction. Is that a role you would claim for the magazine?
I think so, but I think going forward things will change a little bit because obviously there are many ways of telling a story. For example, in the issue on sex, which we have coming out right now, there's a piece by a Japanese writer named Natsuo Kurino, and it's about a woman who gets shipwrecked on an island. And she's the only woman with 30 other men. And at the start of the story, the right to be her husband is auctioned off. And, of course, this is a very unrealistic scenario, but it very keenly gets at both the sense that women are hunted, in a way, and also the sense that we all make decisions about who we're with, and that can change our lives. And I think going forward we're going to have more pieces like that, because I think if we restrict ourselves to realism, something that captures the world and all its minute details in a way that we recognize instantly, I think we'll be limiting ourselves.
Grant is also an unusual mix of fiction, memoir, photojournalism, reportage. How do you, as an editor, approach the storytelling in those different mediums?
Well, it has to feel true. And that can mean lots of different things, but you kind of know it in your gut. And your first question about what does stories do, one of the great things that stories do is they make you put yourselves in the life of someone else. And that kind of empathic leap is what makes stories so powerful, because it makes us experience the world through someone else's eyes. And when we put together an issue, the main goal is to try to create a kind of music to the theme, you know, to carry the reader through, just as a conductor does through a symphony, through different scores, through different movements. And, you know, that means putting together different genres, because they can accomplish different things. And some writers are very, very good in one genre, but not so good in others. And so what we try to do is find the best story and the best kind of story for each writer, and then to put that together.
As you said, they're themed, and this current issue is sex, and it has a fabulous photograph of a pink clutch purse on the front. And some of the other themes have been really interesting, like a city, Chicago, or fathers. Do you theme them because they're fun and it's an easy way to cross these different genres? And how do you come up with them?
Well, it's kind of like trying to find a lightning field, you know, where things are happening and where sparks are flying. And I think sex has often been underrated as a good territory for literature. I mean, look, Chaucer wrote about sex. Shakespeare wrote about sex. All the great novelists wrote about sex, even in the most sort of elliptical ways. And listen, we all do it. You know, we didn't come here out of an immaculate conception. So it's a very basic aspect of human life. And while we're not doing it, we're thinking about it. So for sex, we thought it's about time that we address that. But for other themes, we're just simply looking for places which are interesting spaces for writers. Chicago, there was lots and lots of great new writers coming from Chicago who were telling the city's stories in ways that were similar but different than the old storytellers, Nelson Algren, Saul Bellow, Richard Wright, that sort of thing. And, you know, we did an issue on work because, similarly to sex, there's some great things that you can do when you think about work in a profound kind of broad way. And coming up, we have an issue on Pakistan, because there's a great new group of Pakistani writers. So really what we're doing is just trying to find where something exciting is happening.
Let's take the Pakistan example. How do you find these writers? Do they approach you, or do you send someone out, or how do you find them?
I don't mean to sound too airy-fairy about it, but it's a bit like stargazing. You look up at the sky long enough and suddenly you see things which may have been there all the time, but suddenly they jump out at you. And in the case of Pakistan, there's five or six very, very talented young Pakistani writers, Daniel Muid Newton, Mohsin Hamid, Camilla Shamsi, Nadine Islam, Mohammed Hanif, you know, that are writing and have suddenly burst onto the literary scene in the same way that Indian writers were about 25 years ago. And, you know, that in itself is an excuse to do an issue. And once you start to put down roots with certain pieces, we've bought pieces by almost all of those writers now, other options open up. And so the challenge for us is to try to find more writers who are writing in Urdu and other languages rather than English, because that's very important for the issue. And then once people hear about it, they start contacting us. So it does work a little bit on word of mouth.
How do you approach the commercial aspect as an editor? Do you find that you're balancing sort of literary integrity against the commercial aspect, or you don't think about that at all?
Well, the commercial aspect only really comes in once we're once the issue is done and it's printed, and we have to figure out how to publish it. And so for the sex issue, we made three films, short films that correspond with pieces by Dave Eggers and Mark Doty, this American poet, who's written a great piece about being married to a woman and falling in love with a man, and Roberto Bolaño, who has a piece about sort of imagining a redheaded prostitute who may or may not be a prostitute. And we try to think in ways that get the issue out there, that translate it into a commercial product, if you will, that allows it to move in viral worlds and into bookshops. And that's kind of fun to think about, but while we're making the issue and choosing the pieces, we don't think about that at all.
What's the current circulation? What do you know about the readers?
It's about 50,000, and I would say half of that goes to subscribers in the US and UK, and then we have subscribers in Europe and quite a few subscribers here in Australia, New Zealand, and then bookshops here take up a few thousand copies, which is great. We looked recently, and there are more Australian bookshop copies floating around than copies in England, which has to do with the way that bookshops have kind of collapsed in England. And it's really exciting and kind of cheering to be here, because, you know, I think when you make an issue, a magazine, which is on paper, and as we try very hard to make it look beautiful, like with that purse, you know, it has to land somewhere. And I think we live in such virtual worlds now, on email and, you know, using the web, that I think people believe less that something is special when it's in print, but we're trying to celebrate that. So the fact that our copies arrive here by boat and are celebrated when they get into the shops is really exciting.
What about the digital era in publishing? How does that, or does it, impact what you do?
Absolutely, because the way people read is changing, at least very heavily in the US. You know, Apple sold 1 million iPads in the first month. Lots and lots of people use the Kindle. So for sex, we're sort of experimenting with sex. You know, we've got an iPhone app, which we're developing, which should be ready fairly soon. We've developed an e-reader for the Kindle, which hopefully can work on other sort of platforms. And, you know, look, the most important thing to us is the actual magazine, the print magazine. You know, that's how we set up the whole issue. But to be realistic about it, we need to do these other things, because that's how some people want to read and that's how they want to get it.
You live in New York City. You're the first editor of Granta ever to live outside the UK. I just wondered how you felt about its origins as essentially a British magazine. I know it has a world audience.
Well, there's something sort of ironic in the way that Granta was started, because it was two Americans on fellowship at Cambridge, which took this very, very old student literary magazine and reinvented it and did their first issue and titled it New American Writing. And one of their problems with British writing at the time was they felt it was overly wedded to realism, and that it was overly wedded to chronicling the end of the British Empire. And so it's almost like this magazine, which came out of a feeling of failure with those things, became yet another literary imperial project. And, you know, that I say that in the best term, because it's trying to look out at the world and see what the best writing is wherever it is. And so the fact that I actually spend half the year in London and half the year in New York and go back and forth every 3 weeks, so I'm there quite a bit. But, you know, nations and nationalism and national identity are often good topics for literature, but when you start to put magazines, especially one like Granta, which is in New York and which is in London, and we have subscribers around the world, into a national bracket, I think it you can run into problems, because it means that, you know, writing changes. Where exciting writing is changes. And if we were too wedded to being a British magazine, you know, doing something like a Chicago issue, which I thought worked out really well, or a Pakistan issue, can somehow seem problematic, and they aren't. It's simply where great writing is happening.
John Freeman there, editor of Granta magazine, speaking with the Book Show's Kate Piercy. John Freeman is also the author of Shrinking the World, the 4,000-year history of how email came to rule our lives, and it's published by Text. This is the Book Show on ABC Radio National. I'm Ramona Koval. We are, of course, online at abc.net.au/rn/bookshow, and there you can find transcripts of stories and you can read our blog. You'll find a helpful do's and don'ts guide for writers' websites and some advice for how to read while walking.